Gründer, I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ernest Blum. I'm a member of the committee.
My name is as introduced, I'm Lima Kasana Manzini, also a new member to this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dana Joseph, member of the committee.
Good morning, all. I'm Savannah Bliss from PMG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I've been requested by the Acting Secretary for Defense to just pass his apology for not being able to attend the meeting. Apparently, he has been tasked to attend some interministerial committee meeting somewhere around Cape Town. I seem to have lost, Chair, my facility here. He has been tasked to attend some interministerial committee around Cape Town, so he will not be able to join us for today. Chair, we will be giving you a presentation on the Military Ombud Bill, which was passed by the National Assembly already. And Chair, perhaps just to set the background to the bill, some members of the committee may recall that in 1996, when the white paper was passed by this House, there was a specific provision in the white paper which allowed the department or basically instructed the department to consider the possibility of establishing the Office of the Ombudsman. To just quote the exact words of the white paper in this regard, it reads, "The Department of Defense supports the creation of the post of military ombud person, whose main duties are to monitor adherence to democratic civil military relations and undertake investigations at the request of Parliament and investigate complaints against SAMAF by military personnel and members of the public. The ombud person will be an independent office that is appointed by and reports to Parliament. The powers and functions of the ombudsman will be spelled out in the legislation." Now, the current bill, Chair, seeks exactly to do that, to set up the office of the ombud and to set out the powers of the ombud, powers and functions of the ombud. But in 1998, again, Chair, when the defense review was done, the point was reiterated. And the defense review of 1998 recognizes that the white paper on defense had already motivated for the military ombud's office inter alia to investigate complaints against the SANDF by military personnel. It is envisaged that the ombud person will address any military personnel matters which can be resolved through the already existing complaints mechanism within the Department of Defense. Now, notwithstanding these policy statements, both in the white paper and the defense review, the 1996 Constitution had already established an Office of the Public Protector. Now, the mandate of the Public Protector is broad enough to cover the whole scope of the public administration, including the SANDF or the Department of Defense. As a result of the existence already at the time of the Public Protector Office, an arrangement was made between the Department of Defense that instead of creating a separate office to execute a mandate that is almost similar to the mandate of the Public Protector, that instead the Office of the Public Protector will establish a small office within its staff to attend specifically to issues to complaints arising from the military. Notwithstanding, Chair, the establishment of that office within the military, within the Public Protector, the PCD has since 1998-1999 express a concern with regard to the workings of that office. And one particular concern was that the level of that office was too low. And secondly, that it is not well resourced enough to deal with all the complaints emanating from the Defense Force. And since that time, the Portfolio Committee on Defense has always been considering a possibility of establishing this office. There were a series of consultations between the Department of Defense and the Portfolio Committee as to how this office should be established. And in those consultations, the Office of the Public Protector was very much part of those consultations. And the different public protectors that have served had expressed different opinions about really the necessity of that. You will remember at the time of Advocate Bakwa, there was a strong feeling that the office that we sought to create had the same powers as the public protector, and therefore it would not be necessary. But when Advocate Mushwana took over, there were concessions that the public protector was prepared to make. And the concessions were that given the unique nature of the ministry, the office of the public protector is not equipped enough to be able to deal with the special kind of complaints that emanate from that environment. And therefore they were prepared to allow the Portfolio Committee to proceed to establish the office, subject to the condition that the jurisdiction of the public protector will not be excluded. So those series of consultations resulted in the current bill that is before the Select Committee. If I may move, Chair, just to take the committee through some of the salient provisions of the bill. As I've already indicated, the bill establishes the Office of the Military Ombudsman and sets requirements for the appointment to the office. And the bill further provides for the appointment, functions, and powers of the military ombud and his or her deputy. Section 2 of the bill establishes the office and empowers the ombud in consultation with the minister to determine the seat of the office. Section 3 sets out the object of the office, which is to investigate and ensure that complaints are resolved in a fair, economical, and expeditious manner within the SAMD. It proceeds, Chair, to set out the mandate of the office. Chair, I think at a later stage, once we are done presenting just the content of the bill, we will speak as to very briefly as to what the changes are that were effected in the National Assembly. But at this stage, I will just set out what the bill provides. The mandate of the office is again to investigate the complaints lodged in writing by members and former members of the Defense Force regarding the conditions of service and members of the Republic of the public regarding the official conduct of the members of the Defense Force. Then, Chair, we move to the appointment and the removal of the ombudsman, of the ombud. Now again, Chair, if the committee can just bear this particular provision in mind, because we'll speak about it at a later stage when it comes to the appointment, because there was again an amendment that was effected. The appointment of the ombudsman will be done by the President, but on the recommendation of the National Assembly. In other words, the similar procedure that is followed with regard to other Chapter 9 institutions, like the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission, and I believe even the Board of SABC. The NA recommends a person nominated by the PCD. The ombud must possess knowledge of the Constitution and have legal knowledge. He must have knowledge and experience in the military or public service for at least a minimum period of 10 years. The ombudsman is appointed for a non-renewal term of 7 years. The President determines the remuneration and other conditions of employment with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. The deputy ombud may be removed from office by the President on grounds of misconduct, incapacity, and incompetence. The President must afford the deputy ombud a reasonable opportunity to make a decision prior to a decision being made with regard to removal. Now, you will see the procedure differs with regard to the removal of the ombud from that of the deputy ombud. Now, the ombud, because he is appointed on the recommendation of Parliament, the same procedure is followed with regard to removal. There must be, although the grounds are the same, but the procedure is different. In other words, in this particular case, there must be a recommendation by a majority of the members of the National Assembly before the President may take a decision to remove the minister ombud. The powers and the functions. Section 6 sets out powers and functions of the ombud and the deputy ombud. And in particular, it states that the ombud will investigate complaints fairly and expeditiously without fear or prejudice. some interferences in my screen share now. The Ombud must inform all interested parties to the complaint before conducting an investigation. In other words, once a complaint has been received by the Ombud, he has a responsibility to contact all the persons against whom a complaint has been filed before he conducts an investigation and makes his findings. The Ombud has the power to summon any person to give evidence if that is deemed necessary for the purposes of resolving a dispute. The Ombud may confirm or dismiss the complaint or issue alternative resolution. Again, here, Chair, there was a long debate as to whether the Ombud should have the power to actually issue orders that are binding on the department. But at the end, it was settled that the Ombud, like the Public Protector's Office, like the Human Rights Commission, should simply make recommendations which will then be implemented by the executive if there is a meeting of minds. So it will not be binding orders by the Ombud. It will operate in the same fashion as the Office of the Public Protector. Section 7 deals with limitation of jurisdiction of the Ombud. The Ombud may not investigate complaints relating to military judicial officers. Now the committee will recall that within the SANDF, there is what we call a military justice system, where all the offending members of the military are charged with offenses and where punishment is meted for any kind of transgression. Now, this limitation seeks to protect the independence of that institution in the sense that where a judge makes a ruling in a military court, the Ombud will not have the power to override that. So that is specifically excluded from the jurisdiction of this office. The Ombud, again, may not make a ruling on matters pending before a civil court or a military court. For the same reason, Chair, that the courts are supposed to exist independently, the Ombud should desist from making decisions with regard to matters that are pending before the courts. Or matters that are finalized by a civil court or military court. Again, Chair, is just linked to the issue of the independence of courts. Once a court pronounces itself on a particular matter, all organs of state are bound to follow that. So the Ombud cannot set aside decisions of court. Further, Chair, the Ombud may refuse to deal with frivolous complaints that may undermine channel of command, prescribed complaints subject to other dispute resolution mechanisms, complainant who did not subject his complaint to the grievance regulations. Now, Chair, you will recall that initially, when we looked at the white paper, there was a specific qualification to the establishment of the office that it will only deal with all grievances that could not be resolved through the existing grievance procedure of the department. So in other words, this provision seeks to recognize that within the defense force, there are dispute resolution mechanisms that are in existence. And therefore, the defense force or the command of the defense force should be given an opportunity, firstly, to deal with those grievances in terms of the grievance procedure that is applicable within the military. Only once that grievance procedure has failed to deliver an acceptable outcome to the member, that a member can approach the public protector. So I think that is really the idea behind this limitation. Chair, in Section 8, we provide for the independence and impartiality of the office. And Chair, I'm sure you will appreciate that. Without guaranteeing the independence and impartiality of the office, the whole purpose of establishing the office will be established. So the bill proposes that the staff of the Ombud should be able to perform their functions in good faith, without fear, favor, bias, or prejudice, and subject only to the Constitution and the law. The minister has an obligation under the bill to assist the Ombud in order to protect its impartiality and independence and the dignity of that office. In other words, while the Ombud is investigating a particular complaint, everybody within the Defense Force has an obligation to cooperate and assist the Ombud in any manner that may be necessary in order to find a resolution to a particular issue. The office must preserve confidentiality of any information acquired in the performance of its functions. Again, Chair, is just to emphasize that the nature of the information that a defense force deals with in many instances is information that may be classified, is information that may be sensitive. But this provision simply calls that the Ombudman, once he receives that kind of information, he must treat it with the necessary deference. The staff of the Ombudsman, the bill in Section 9 provides for the Ombudsman to appoint staff to assist him or her in the performance of his function. The staff must be subject to the necessary security clearance by the Intelligence Division of the Department of Defense. As I've already indicated, Chair, that given the nature of the information that the office may have access to, it is important that the staff that serves there, including the Ombud and the Deputy Ombud, should obtain the necessary security clearance so that they can be able to have access to classified documents. The Ombud, with the concurrence of the Minister and the Minister of Finance, may determine the remuneration and other terms and conditions of service of the staff. Finances, reporting and review. Section 10 provides for the finances and accounting and accountability of the Office of the Ombud. The Ombud will be funded from monies appropriated by Parliament for that purpose as part of the Defence Vote. In other words, they are not going to have a special vote from Parliament, but it counts as part of the Defence Vote. Section 11, Chair, deals with the reporting lines as to whom the Ombudsman reports. And it provides that the Ombud reports to the Minister, and the Minister must then table the report in Parliament. In other words, it's the same procedure that is followed in respect of other entities of a similar nature. Once they have finalized, on an annual basis, they submit a report to the Minister. And then the Minister, in terms of the bill, is obliged to come to Parliament and table the report for consideration by Parliament. Section 13 provides for the review of the decisions of the Home Vote. Chair, this again is just a standard provision that if anybody is dissatisfied for whatever reason with the ruling or the decision of the public of the ombudsman, that person is entitled in law to review the decision of the ombudsman in the High Court. Offences and penalty, this is again should be considered in line with the whole issue regarding the independence and impartiality of the office. And it provides that anyone who hinders or obstructs the ombud or staff in the performance of their duty commit an offence and is liable on conviction to a sentence exceeding 12 or a fine or both. Anyone again who fails to preserve confidentiality in respect of information of the office is liable on conviction to a period not exceeding 24 months. But again, it's just to reinforce the issue we had already alluded to, that where the information is granted to the ombudsman in confidence, it is the responsibility of that office to ensure that information is treated accordingly, so that state secrets are not unnecessarily disclosed. Chair, in conclusion, we just state that an institution of this nature is not new in our public service. And we give an example of similar institutions within the police, like the Independent Complaints Directorate, which deals exactly with all the complaints against the members of the South African police. Internationally, countries like Canada have similar institutions that deal with complaints. Other countries have different system of complaints commissioner. So there is established precedent within the military where the institutions of this nature are in existence. And I think, Chair, we have appeared before Parliament on a number of occasions on the issue of a number of grievances within the military that are not resolved through the structure that are currently there. So this mechanism is intended to complement all the systems and the processes that the military already has. But where a member cannot be satisfied by the internal mechanism, it may be that our systems are viewed to be biased or anything or related to that. But now we create an independent office that is sort of have an appellate authority over the military that can make recommendations to the minister, and the minister can then direct the department to act accordingly if she agrees or he agrees with those findings. But it's just to make sure that there is an independent authority that deals with all the complaints by members of the Defence Force or public against the Defence Force. Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know if Mr. Thomas Chair would like to add anything from the Minister's side.
Before I allow members to engage with the report, can you go to the last but one slide that deals with the penalties, yes? A conviction of period exceeding 12, is it 12 months or 12 years?
12 months.
Okay. Honourable members who can engage with the report, Honourable Gunda, Honourable Drew, and Honourable Joseph, Honourable Mandela, in that way.
Chairperson, thank you.
It is such an important, I don't have a question, I'm just going to raise my concerns and my comments. In such an important bill, it's a 75 bill and it's a national issue.
and NCOP has got nothing to say. Everything is about the portfolio committee and the NA. And I don't think this thing is fair because this bill affects ordinary people on the ground as well. Why doesn't this thing say Parliament? Why doesn't this thing include the Joint Standing Committee on Defense? Why doesn't this bill include the NCOP as a whole as Parliament? Now we're going to debate on this issue, we're going to raise concerns. It all depends if they want to include it, if they don't want to include it, it's fine. But this bill will go through because it's Section 75 bill. And such a bill of such importance, how can this thing, which affects, because military things affects people on the ground, not only high profile people. It affects a lot of people, and when you read through this bill, this thing, it's NA, it's Portfolio Committee of Defense, it's NA. And for me, that's my personal opinion. I'm wasting my time sitting here listening to this bill, and I can't explain to the ordinary men on the ground out there if they've got a problem. I must say to them, find an NA guy that can assist you, or go and read Section 75. How's that fair to that person, and yet I'm his or her public representative? And this is the thing that I've got a big problem with. So I'm just raising my concerns concerning this bill. So if there's any way to vote, I'm not going to vote. I'm going to abstain because I'm not interested, because this thing has not got the people's interest on the ground, because we can't make any amendments to this thing because we're not NA. We're not Portfolio Committee. I don't like it. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Gunda is very angry. But the reason why we are sitting with the bill is also to discuss the bill and to make proposals from our side. Mm. Now, the very same point that Mr. Gunda is raising, I think in Section 5 of the Portfolio Committee 2. I will read it. The National Assembly must recommend persons nominated by the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans and approved by the National Assembly by a resolution. Now, I will say my recommendation would be that we put the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, because it consists of both houses, National Assembly and NCOP, then it will cover the concern of Mr. Gunda and the committee itself. Then Chairperson, on the same appointment of military, the salary, I think it's 7 a.m. The salary of the ombud must not be less than the salary of a judge of a high court. Now, my proposal will also now be that the ombudsman must be equal, the salary must be equal for the same as the chairperson of the Chapter 9 institution. You see, the public protector, the chairperson of the Human Rights Commission, and so on. Why must it be the salary of a judge? That is my two proposals, Chair, on this matter.
Maybe before I give over to Honorable Daniels, what are the reasons that the salary should not be less than that of a judge?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with the expression of the previous speaker, because the comparisons that were made by the person who did the presentation was exactly that, comparing it with other Chapter 9 institutions. Chair, I think I would also like to go further asking a question about, will there be will there be, on the finance, will there be a budget increase? Because it said that there will not be a separate budget, but it will come out of the vote of the department. So I would like to know, will there be a budget increase? Will the department need a budget increase to make this sure that this Ombudsman and Public Protector function properly? And I assume it will be one office from a national office with provincial opportunities wherever people find themselves to feed into that national office. I just want to confirm that, but in particular if there will be a budget increase needed in order to implement it properly. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Apologies for arriving late, Chair. I had a meeting with the Chief Whip's office. The first point I wanted to raise is maybe we need an explanation as to why the National Assembly made these changes, referring to point 5, section 5. Because my view is that I don't think it will be necessary, in actual fact, to equate that particular office with the Chapter 9 institutions, but also I don't think it will be necessary for the President to appoint the Ombudsman. Because I think it should be an internal matter of the military. Because if you hear what this office will be dealing with, it won't be equal to the task that is done by, for example, the public protector or a judge itself, you see. Now, my view will be, because this person must be appointed by the minister, must operate independently in that particular office, and must report to the minister. That will be my view. But I want to just get the reasons why the National Assembly changed that whole situation, because I would recommend to the committee to reject this bill and send it back and and then refer it to the old bill, the old proposal, that we then deal with those, particularly in terms of this particular section, you know, the appointment and all those issues. But let's get the reasons first so that we can deal with that particular situation, Chair.
You can respond.
Chair, I honestly do not know how to respond to the comment by Mr. Mfunda. For the simple reason, Chair, that the Constitution classifies bills into three. The Section 74, 75, and I don't think as a department we are in a position to determine whether a bill is 75. I think the bill's office does the tagging of the bill. And the tagging of the bill obviously has certain implications as to who makes what decision. So I don't think really the department is in a position to help you much in that regard. But with regard to the there is a suggestion by Honorable Mr. Bloom that the portfolio committee should be replaced by the joint standing committee, which encompasses both houses. And again, Chair, I think that's a policy decision. If this committee feels very strongly about it and it believes that it will be very inclusive to do so, I suspect we will defer to the committee. I don't think the department is in a position to tell Parliament as to who should deal with these matters within Parliament. I think the separation of powers necessitates that we defer to Parliament. I think it's a matter that the committee should discuss with the PCB and reach an agreement. The issue of salary, Chair, I think firstly I need to point out that the provision relating to Judges Remuneration Act is very much a copycat of what you will find in other Chapter 9 institutions. The public protector earns the salary in terms of the Judges Remuneration Act. So the Chapter 9s use the same wording of this one. With regard to the question by Honorable Mr. Josephs, with regard to budget. I think, Chair, the budget will have to increase over the years. And I think that will be very much influenced by the budget requirement that the Department of Defense submits on an annual basis. So in other words, the department, based on historical data, will be able to know that the current allocation for that particular year was 10 million, and that it should be adjusted accordingly in terms of inflation and other requirements in the following year. So I don't see it being a static figure. On an annual basis, there will be the necessary adjustment depending on historical data, because it will inform whether the previous allocation was sufficient or not. So there will be that adjustment. I don't see it as being a static figure. With regard to provincial offices or regional offices, I suspect that the bill does not speak to provincial offices. And I suspect that if it had done, maybe the tagging would have been different, but I don't know. But I suspect that whatever happens at the end of the day, there will have to be a mechanism to ensure that all the members of the Defence Force throughout the country are able to access the office. It could be that there will be small offices that are located in provinces to ensure that they receive all the complaints and channel them to the national office. But at the moment, the issue of provincial offices is not visible in the bill. But I think there has to be a mechanism of sorts. Either you use the existing units of the Defence Force as a mechanism to channel all the complaints to the determined seat of the office of the minister. But as to whether there will be special offices, I don't think the workload may justify that each province, because I don't think the Defence Force is located in such a way that there may be justification for each province to have an office. But I think a mechanism, a system will have to be devised to ensure that there is an inlet for the people wherever they are. They don't have to go to Pretoria or to Cape Town. They must be able to lodge and file complaints wherever they are, and the Defence Force will have to provide the mechanism to get them to the right place. With regard to the changes, Chair, on Section 5, I think the motivating the factor for this, and I think, Chair, I would invite my colleague from the Parliamentary Legal Advisor and the State Law Advisor to correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding was that the primary concern was the issue of the independence of the office, that the office at the end should not be seen by the members as just a creation of the minister and under the direct control of the minister. I think that was the primary concern that the PCD had raised, that create an office that has a semblance of independence so that the members can see this as something that is divorced from the command channel of the defense, so that they can be able to freely go to the office and say, I have been treated in this way, without a fear that this thing is being controlled by the very same Defence Force that you are complaining about. So the feeling was that perhaps you need to create some distance between this office in terms of appointment and control from the ministry. That if their president appoints and there is an independent, or at least a process that is seen as independent, and the only precedence that they could draw from at the time was the process with regard to public protectors and all. So that's why this was favored. but the debate by the department even then was always that we are comfortable with the president appointing without the role for parliament. But parliament felt very strongly, more especially the PCD, that they should have some role to create that semblance of independence. Thank you very much.
Are there any views from the State Law Advisor and the Parliamentary Legal Advisor?
Mine would be to respond on the tagging of the bill with Section 75. We did, as an office, we did tag the bill as a Section 75, and it was confirmed because we were not classifying the bill as Parliament. Do classify the bills. So it was confirmed that it was correctly tagged in Section 75. Reason for tagging is the Section 75, we looked at the schedules which guides us in determining whether the bill should be Section 74, 75, or 76, or 77. And in terms of Schedule 4,
You can continue.
I'm just classifying, explaining the processes followed and why we didn't take in the assessment of expert. The Schedule 4 of the Constitution, it deals with functional areas of concurrent, both national and provincial legislative competence. And it lists all the areas within which both the national, which is parliament, and the province may take or may legislate upon. So in this instance, the bill or the context of the bill, what it seeks to provide, it was not listed either in Schedule 4 or Schedule 5 of the Constitution. So it was not listed in all of those areas. So the next step that we followed, we looked at Section 44 of the Constitution, which is National Legislative Authority. And thereby, if you read Section 44, it gives a national legislative authority, as vested in Parliament, a power to pass legislation with regard to any matter. So since the establishment of the Office of the Military Ombuds was not listed in either Schedule 4 or Schedule 5 to the Constitution, so we considered that the what Parliament seeks to do in terms of this legislation is any matter as contemplated in Section 44.2. And the other thing that we also looked at is the judgment of Thongwane, which was passed last year. That judgment, it created a precedent in classifying of bills. And the principle that we accepted there as was argued in the judgment is, if legislation in substantial measure it deals with matters listed in Schedule 4, it should be tagged as the Section 76. And also, if the legislation in substantial measure it affects the provinces, it must be tagged as a Section 76. And when we looked at the bill, we couldn't find any provision that would affect the provinces. So we looked, we're guided by both the Constitution and that judgment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to comment regarding the appointment procedure that the Honourable Member raised. In the original law, the minister did not make the appointment. Originally, it was the president who appointed the military office. The portfolio committee was that they needed to create a formal independent structure that was created in the bill. And by allowing the National Assembly to the portfolio committee a role, enables formal engagement and allows for the public to have some sort of input. And it creates the perception among those who are going to use this institution that there is a formal independent. If the minister appoints directly, then it may create a perception among the soldiers that their complaints are not going to be dealt with adequately or independently, because the military office is going to be answerable directly to the minister.
No, Chair,
if that is the case, I will therefore recommend to this particular committee to refer this matter back to the National Assembly, so that we then go back to the original bill where the president appoints, but then Parliament is holding the appointment of the ombudsman. Because to me, when I look at the differences, we should not equate this thing towards the public protector. Because if we open it up, we'll then be opening up our military towards and if you take the situation in the country now, towards a lot of infiltration, what is happening using either the Constitutional Court or the public protector, you know, to deal with matters that are extremely sensitive, because I believe the Constitutional Court and the public protector can deal with those particular matters, but not necessarily the ombudsman, as far as the military is concerned. So that, you know, if the ombudsman is independent, and because he's been appointed by the president, you know, that does not attach the ombudsman towards that particular, to the military, because he's appointed by the president. But you must also not forget that the chief commander of the military is the president and not the minister. You must also not forget that situation. Because if you're saying independence
and then the president appoints. That is not independent, you see. And I'm just saying this thing now, and I think in terms of the original bill, that was the best situation that we could deal with, so that we also cut some red tape, because if it must come to parliament, you know, there's a lot of red tape that will happen, and at the end of the day you will be unable to deal with specific matters that has to be dealt with speedily in the military itself, you see. And that is the point I'm trying to raise, Chair, and I would recommend to this committee to send it back to and take Member Bloom's point, Member's Bloom's point, that possibly because the President will be appointed, but dealing with this particular situation, why don't you take the joint committee so that it becomes Parliament that deals with this specific matter, the joint committee on military. Yeah, you see, we take it through that particular route, but the President appoints, yeah, and it's dealt with, because at the end of the day, whether the President or whatever, this particular person will have to inform the Minister, will have to, you know, will have to do, because that the Minister has an executive authority to, you see, will have to do that. Why must Parliament play that specific role? Yeah, Chair. And that is the point I'm trying to raise. We send it back that way. We also indicate that there's a new amendment that we're putting forward, that it shouldn't be the portfolio committee, but the joint committee on military and defense, yeah? On defense and military veterans, you know? And we leave it that way, because that will then say we have the old bill with this new amendment, yeah? on which committee deals with this particular matter. And that's it, Chair.
I want to support wholeheartedly that proposal, to send the bill back with our amendment, that the but the bill must come back, we send it back to that. I fully support my colleague there.
I fully agree with I support what the member is saying. There's one part that I want to understand. What is the joint committee going? What is going to be the role of the joint committee? You seem to be saying the president must appoint, then the portfolio committee, the National Assembly or Parliament must have nothing to do with that. And then I fully agree with that. But then there's this element that the joint committee, what the joint committee must deal with. That's what I couldn't
Yeah. No, Chair, I think Honourable Nessy is correct. Because we then replace the National Assembly with Parliament. We then say Parliament. No? You don't have to put in the joint portfolio committee, because if you say Parliament will deal with this particular matter, you know? Because the President will no. But I think there's confusion.
Yeah.
We don't know what the exact bill.
Just a moment.
Yeah.
Honourable members are questioning that can we have a premier's caucus as the committee?
Okay.
We request you to excuse us and we'll call you back.
Thank you. Thank you.
all right, thank you. I'm fine.
Sure.
Don't worry. Thank you, though.
Gracias.
Thank you.